America leads the world in medicine development. It matters. We get new medicines first, nearly 3 years faster. 5 million Americans go to work because we make medicines here at home. And not relying on other countries keeps us safe. But China is racing to overtake us. Will we let them, or will we choose to stay ahead? When America leads, America cures. Let's tell Washington to keep us in the lead.
Learn how at americacures.com. Paid for by Pharma.
We are back, everybody. It is another episode of Inside Boxing Live. It is Dan Canobio. It is Chris Algieri. We are powered by PPV.com. PPV.com, the worldwide leader in live pay-per-view events. Stream it everywhere. Stream it everywhere and often. Join us in the live chats when you stream on PPV.com. Some big fights coming up this summer. Fight season in full effect in many, many ways. And join us always at PPV.com, sending us out to big fights. We're going to be at a lot of big fights this summer. Chris, we are about 24 hours removed from the Eubank Ben show. That was a show. I felt like I stepped out of my body and I was watching a reality show take place, but I'm pretty sure it was real. Connor Ben goes down to Chris Eubank and just an epic afternoon, night in London. Wow. I'm still kind of buzzing coming off of that event. Also, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing really good. So this fight, I mean, we started to get more excited as we got closer, right? And the fight actually lived up to it. It all the drama that led up to it, the drama didn't stop until literally when they walked in the ring. I mean, the walkout, especially Chris Eubank's walkout, was like, I don't know. I felt the thing when he walked out. You know, he had the Simply the Best, that song that was so awesome when he came out. He had his father with him. They're in matching coats. He sat up there and took his time. I like that. He showed, he took it all in. You know, he's in a giant arena with 67,000 people, which is ridiculous. And he sat there, he soaked it all in, and he treated it like someone of his stature in terms of being the elder statesman in that fight, the guy who had been there, the guy who had, fought for world titles before, the guy who had been 12 rounds many, many times. It was cool, especially, I mean, we'll get into the whole thing, but no, it was, like you said, it was an event and it was fun. It was exciting. It was what it was. And I think I think we're all excited because there was so much of a buildup and we're so used to getting let down and right. Then we weren't. It was actually like a good fight. I mean, listen, I'll get into it later. People are talking about this as like a world time epic fight. That's like a world class.
You're going to pour some cold water on that?
I'm 100%. Because I've seen no one do that. I'm like, am I losing my mind? Because the fight wasn't that good.
But it's graded with a curve because of the things you just said.
Yes.
And
yes.
I put out a little video afterwards, and we've been around the sport enough. And how many buildups have we seen that are massive? And Pacquiao Mayweather comes to mind, number one.
Yes.
It was years in the making. I'm not saying this fight is even close to the magnitude of that, but I'm just using it as
an example
level, of a
or talent right. or skill or right, championship right. pedigree or any of that.
I'm using that as an example of a buildup. Every fight has a buildup, some bigger than the others. And this Ben Eubank one was 25 years in the making because of their fathers that stepped into the ring, and also 3 years in the making on top of it because of what all happened with Ben. So there was a big time buildup for this. You could add in, just pick your poison on what you wanted to talk about in terms of narratives for this fight, whether it was the dads, whether it was Ben's PED usage, whether it was a small ring, whether it was the weight, whether it was eggs, whether it was the promoters hating each other, whether it was the secondary promoter who was Frank Smith, who was dating Chris Eubank's sister. You want to go down that rabbit hole?
I forgot about that.
There's literally like a chapters of buildup and stories that like the Daily Mail and all those British publications could write about. And if you're a casual fan, you might pick up on one of those stories. You might pick up on, oh, wow, that's weird. I didn't know their dad's fault. Oh, I didn't know that Frank Smith, that guy that's always standing next to Eddie, is dating the sister of Chris Eubank, who's the promoter of Conor Ben. That's got to be weird. Point being that this is a big, big time buildup. And we've often seen in boxing when they step into the ring, the fight doesn't live up to it because it's just hard. It's just hard for everything to for all the stars to align. This fight, it was a brawl. technical went out the window. And that's what I was kind of expecting, but not to this level. I mean, they're not guys that are going to win world titles. Maybe Conor Benn, if he goes down to 147, we'll talk about that too. Chris Eubank was treating this as his world title matchup, yes, and his moment, his Super Bowl, and good for him. He grown Mandem in there, and he won the fight. But it's so rare that the lead up equals the fight, and they were slugging it out, bro. I know you're a technical guy. You're Chris Algier. You're a technician. That could have been your nickname inside of the ring. But when they're brawling in there, they're just rock'em sock'em robots, and it's a rocky lead up, and the dad shows up, and it's a movie-esque Hollywood script. Like Ryan Coogler, who directed Creed, would look at that script and say, guys, are we kidding with this? This is way too much. We have to tone this down a little bit. You tell me the dad is going, who's been saying that the son is disgraced, is going to come out of the SUV and the whole place is going to go nuts? We knew it was coming, and I still jumped up off my couch.
Wait, I'm going to pump the brakes. I'm not going to go excited. Hollywood. I'm going to go WWE. This was, listen.
Hollywood adjacent.
Turki Alaşık, TKO's group. These guys, they do the WWE. Turki loves WWE as well, apparently. This was very WWE. So, like you said, we had said it on our air. So, I'm sorry, everybody. We took the cat out of the bag before it happened. We were the only people who said this. Everyone was like, oh, man, he's not going to be at the ringside. Of course he's going to be at ringside, guys. Like, he is the consummate showman that is senior. I'm talking about Chris Eubank, senior. If you know anything about his career, that man is an absolute consummate showman, and he will sell it.
His whole strut, like his whole, like,
everything
what is he
about
doing?
Him. He's so awesome.
He was like,
he is.
He was just moving.
Every moment he's on camera, I was enthralled. He has so much charisma. Chris Eubank Sr. has so much incredible charisma on top of the fact that he was a fantastic fighter. Like, I mean, I'm a big fan. I'm actually a big fan of both Nigel Benn and Chris Eubank. I think they're both really, really fantastic fighters in very different ways. But Chris Eubank Sr. was a technician. I've said that many times on this show. But also, he was very technical and tactical and strategic with the way that he spoke. He's a wordsmith, which Chris Eubank Jr. inherited from his father. Yeah, right. The difference is charisma. Chris Eubank Sr.'s charisma is off the goddamn charts.
Dude, when
he was
came
on
out
camera,
of that car. Yeah,
it was dude,
nuts.
When he was on camera every single time, I mean, he's dancing, he's this, he's that, he's taking it all in. It was incredible. But when he stepped out of that when they had that playing where he steps out of the limo or the car, and then like everyone goes crazy, and then they go clip to Nigel Benn and Conor Benn watching, and Conor looked pissed that he showed up. Like, it was like, bro, this is full on WWE style. Full on.
Yeah,
in
but
every way.
It's not
the camera
it's
cuts.
Written, though.
No, I mean, is it though? I mean, we predicted it.
The only difference between WWE and boxing is they really step into the ring and they show out.
They fought.
But
and
I do
they
think
fought.
They fought. And those guys did fight. We'll get to
they
that.
Fought,
I mean,
they
obviously.
Fought. They did fight.
Oh, man. I mean, what a.
I can tell my hands to both men. Both men really dug in.
That 12th round was epic stuff, and it looked like Rocky in there. And the long-winded point here is that the build-up, it crossed over into the casual fan. I don't know if it got the casual fan here in the States, but definitely got the casual fan in the UK. Mm-hmm. And then when you step into the ring, you want to see that. Like, you want to see blood and guts. You want to see momentum swings. You want to see rounds where Eubank threw over 100 punches. The last round, they were just throwing caution to the wind. And that would be in a movie scene. That would be the last scene in the movie of Rocky, of them throwing like insane combinations that, you know, don't make any sense. Like, that's what it kind of looked like. And it all added up. And what it made for was an extremely memorable night, an extremely memorable afternoon here in the U.S. And why I believe it is the front runner for fight of the year, because I tend to take everything in. I tend to take in the whole moment and the dads and stuff and all that. And then they step into the ring and it was back and forth. I know it wasn't the most technical fight, but I kind of didn't think it was going to be like that.
It wasn't that close of a fight either, though. So when you talk about fight,
I had
of the year,
9-3 for Eubank.
That's what I did. That's how I had it too. 8-4. Well, when all three judges had 8-4, I'm like, I get that, but I had it 9-3. It was hard for me to give. I don't see Ben winning more than four rounds on any possibility, any possible scorecard. But yeah, I gave him three rounds. And the rounds that he won were just based off big shots because all he did was load up. But technically, and then in terms of competitiveness, fight of the year is going to be hard for me. If that's fight of the year, then we had a rough year. I mean, there's a lot more of the year to go.
Well, we're prisoners of the moment when it comes to fight of the year. It's the most recency bias.
Recency bias, yes, of course. But also the lead up really, you know, skewed our vision of it. But at the end of the day, it lived up to its hype because it was fun. It was a good fight. It was enjoyable. Yes. You were on the edge of your seat because, I mean, we're going to get into it round by round and the different phases of the fight, because there were distinct phases of the fight as we go on. But yeah, in terms of an event, certainly I would put it in there for event of the year in terms of lead up, in terms of how long it's been, going on, in terms of father, son drama, all of it. I mean, yeah, event of the year, sure. Fight of the year, I'm gonna bow out of that.
Well, yeah. I mean, the fight of the year, you have candidates. I put together a list last night. Benavidez, Morel, of course. Really, I was on the couch.
High level fight.
Right, fight of the year candidates: Benavidez, Morel, Taraji versus Okoye, which no one really watched. It was a fight over in Japan. That was just epic fight, which had like, you know, buzzer beaters and all sorts of crazy clutch moments from Taraji. Pitbull versus Fiera, which was an all out slugfest. Buatsi versus Smith at 175 pounds.
Brutal fight.
Versus Roach is up there. For the late,
in terms of technique and drama, for sure, and also yes, that's another one's gonna be event of the year because of all of the surrounding.
Yeah, but everything. It's not gonna come close to this. I mean, this fight had everything in terms of event. Yes. This was a fight where you sit down your friends who have nothing, who don't know anything about boxing, and you explain to them everything that's going on, and you let them just sit there, and then
they're not
you
gonna
just
get
sit
it. There.
You know, how about you just have them sit down? You have your friend sit down on the couch, and you don't tell them anything. And you see the Eubank Senior come out of the van, and everyone's screaming. Their friends,
who's
like,
that?
What the
who's
heck?
That?
Yeah, what's the big dad. Deal about that? Oh, that's his dad. Well, why is that important? Because his dad fought the other guy's dad. Are you kidding me? And then like the gloves.
But also,
and
the dad said that he said his son's a disgrace. He's not going to be there on fight night. Now he's here.
Right. All of a sudden, your friend is locked. All of a sudden, you're watching with your girl who usually doesn't care. She's locked in, and they're rooting, and you have good versus evil, and you might want to go for the evil in this one. You might go for Ben. You might think, hey, okay, that's enough. The guy served his suspension or whatever. He's stepping back into the ring. Everyone deserves a second chance in this sport. I'm going for Ben in this one. I mean, it had everything back and forth, and they step into the ring, and they put on an absolute...
Well, both guys got booed walking to the ring, which was incredible, too. Yeah, both
that's
guys getting booed.
That was interesting because... Yeah, because it's a... Because there's, it was, I wouldn't say split. I would say it was leaning more towards Eubank, but you know, there were a lot of
Eddie Hearn said that. He said, I think both guys are going to get booed on the way to the ring. He was really aware of that, which was, I thought that was really impressive of Eddie to be aware of what the audiences are going to be looking at. And he was 100% right. Both guys got booed.
One thing about Eddie, and man, I mean, he's doing his job afterwards. He says he has a problem with the scorecards, has a problem with the scorecards. No, there's no problems with these scorecards. It was 8-4. I understand you have to say that. Well, not the story. Then he goes on to say, Conor Benn is the people's champion, which is a step too far even for a promoter of Eddie's stature and what Eddie has to say.
For
listen,
what weight class, guys?
Listen, here's the key. That's what he said. He said, Conor Benn going up to 160, admirable. He all deserves all of our credit. Him lasting 12 rounds. Admirable. This man is the people's champion. And I was like, listen, that's just, I understand this is a promoter, but it still annoyed me because it's not up to Eddie Hearn to dictate who the people's champion is. It's up to the people. And yes, this went a long way for helping to rehabilitate Conor Benn's reputation. And I think he earned a lot of respect from fans out there. I think it's a good first step. But to say he's the people's champion for what? Like, this is self-inflicted wounds that he is dealing with. And did this effort go a long way in terms of him rectifying his image and getting respect? Absolutely. But people's champion, that's Chris Eubank. Chris Eubank's the people's champion. The people decide, not Eddie Hearn.
That shows you, Eddie, that Conor Benn over-exceeded what Eddie expected. Eddie expected him to lose. Eddie expected him to lose badly. Eddie expected him to show up at a guy that was just way too big and either get starched or beat down or whatever. So the fact that he made it to the end, he said that. He said, oh, the fact that he went 12 rounds with this guy in this way. Oh, come on, man. You whittled the guy down. You made him make 160. You wanted him to fight at 157. You put a hydration clause on him. I mean, he looked like a dead man walking into the ring. and now he made it to the end, and you're like, oh wow, I can't believe he made it. Like, come on, man. Like, we gotta keep everything in perspective from before and after. And like you said, Eddie doing his job, putting on his promoter's hat, doing his charge justice. That's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to fight for your guy, and Eddie's really good at that, and he's doing it once again with Conor Ben.
He rides so hard for Ben. At times, for the last 3 years, I was always wondering, like, is it really worth it? Like, especially throughout the drug stuff, like, to put your reputation on the line?
Yes, because of last night. There were a lot of money was
cashed
made last
in.
Night. Yes.
Cashed in. They're going to fight again, too. Let's get to the actual fight and just kind of go through it. Ben comes out fast, like we thought. Eubank his legs looked tired. He looked like he had a rough cut, and then he had a rough second cut, and then he had a rough... adding the pounds back on.
Rehydration.
Right. It looked
rough. Remember what I said? Did I say it last show? I've talked about it to the people. Hard weight cuts can affect you early. For some guys. They can affect you late for some guys. Some guys, it can affect you both. It affected Eubank both. He had a really hard time with that weight cut. He looked stiff in the beginning, which is normally what happens when you have a hard cut. I've had hard cuts where at the beginning of the fight, I was just like, I'm in a different world. I'm like, I'm just trying to get my body going. Things aren't moving because of multiple things. One, from a fighter's perspective. One, if you had to work the weight off, you might actually be a little stiff and sore in your joints. First of all, you're dehydrated, so your joints are not hydrated, but also you're working through that. So if you're one of those guys who cuts weight, whether you're hitting pads or running it off, whatever, you know, you're going to feel that, especially early on. But you're in fantastic shape. Your body will recover as the fights go, as the rounds go, which is what happened with Chris Eubank, because obviously he was in great shape. But then later on, the dehydration affects you because you're not fully rehydrated. We don't have a lot of time. You know, from a normal weigh-in until fight time, you have about 24 to 30 hours. Some cuts are so bad, it's really hard to even do it in that time, especially if you're not doing it properly. But then if you have a morning of the fight weigh-in, in which case you might wake up on weight, you might wake up a little bit over, you might have to jump in a bath and sweat off a little bit beforehand. I don't know what happened with Eubank in the morning. I don't know if he woke up on weight and was able to do that. Regardless, he probably would have had to diminish or really be careful what he put into his body prior to that before going to sleep and then wake up, maybe don't sleep. When you're dehydrated, it's really hard to sleep. And then you have less time again to put it back into your body. So you can be a little stiff early on, and then late it can affect you, like I said, because you're not fully rehydrated. If you notice, Eubank was drinking water on the way to the ring. As he got to the ring, I was watching everything he was doing, and he kept asking for water. And like, it was a lot of hydration prior to the fight or during the fight. So I don't know if he was completely rehydrated come fight night. But he dogged it out, dude.
Talk about dogging it out, Chris. We talk about how he started slow. Listen to this output from Eubank from the seventh round on. 77 punches in the seventh round, 99 in the eighth, 87 in the ninth. Okay, now, 10, 11, 12. He throws 104 punches, 109 punches, 122 punches. He lands 57 punches in the 12th round, 52 in the 11th.
I mean, he was exhausted then, too. I mean, exhausted. Sheer will, guts, balls, and legacy. He was fighting for the moment. And the passion is what I'm getting so excited about, because the passion. Because I'm watching this guy. I forgot. So, all right. So we'll go from the beginning. So you said, Conor comes out fast, but I had Eubank winning the first round easy. Jab, hook, boom, right off the bat. Bang, bang. He throws a nasty jab, hook off the jab. He's fighting with that jab. He's throwing the hook way too wide, but he's throwing it. Ben comes on in the next couple rounds. I think I had it like 4-2 by round six. And then Eubank, dude, he starts getting on his rhythm because he's a rhythm guy. Once he finds his rhythm, he's hard to deal with, especially being as long, as tall as he is against a much shorter, smaller guy. Bing, bing, bing. He gets on that jab. They're not the hardest shots. Bing, bing, bing. And then I think for a couple rounds, I think it was round eight, he's really starting to beat Conor up. Conor's taking a bunch of shots. Boom, boom, boom. He's looking kind of weak and frail. And looked like Eubank went for it, and then his gas tank fell out the bottom. He looked like he completely went off the cliff. And then from then on, Eubank's, right. And then from then on, he stopped fighting from the outside. He stopped fighting at middle distance and just fought right in front of Ben. And Ben was able to land more shots. He won a bunch of those rounds, or a couple of those rounds, did Ben. But then Eubank just dug deep and just... He's like, all right, I'm gonna sit on your chest. I'm gonna push you back. I'm gonna put you against the ropes, and I'm just gonna let my hands go. He wasn't throwing hard shots. He was getting hit. He made a decision that he goes, okay, at this point, this guy can't hurt me anymore. I'm gonna stand in front of him, give him the fight that he wants because my legs aren't there, and I'm just gonna outwork him off of sheer will and balls. And he did it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, because he came out jabbing Eubank, and the jab kind of disappeared. He threw a lot of jabs in this fight. He threw...
He's got a good jab. He always had a good jab.
He landed 140 jabs. He threw 140 more punches in total.
He landed 140 jabs?
140 jabs. And damn, most of them...
Dude, you're the numbers guy. That's crazy.
It was consistent, too. The ninth round on is when he really got into that phone booth, and he just stopped throwing it. He only landed...
No jabs.
No, he went down significantly, but I would say, second round, 50 jabs, fifth round, 40 jabs, seventh and eighth round, 40 jabs. And then he made a conscious decision, or his body made a decision for him and said, Ben isn't going to hurt me. I'm going to stand in this phone booth and this crowd is going to go absolutely nuts. Everyone watching at home is going to go absolutely nuts. That 12th round was like something out of Rocky. He threw 912 punches. He exceeded his career high by like 350 punches thrown, Eubank. I think his career high was like 550 something.
He took the power off the shots because he hit Ben. Ben showed grit and a chin. He showed an amazing chin, because some of those weird uppercuts that Eubank is really good at, probably his best punches, his most dangerous shots, are these uppercuts from either hand. He throws them really well off his right or his left that guys don't see, and those usually hurt guys. He landed several of those on Ben, clean, hard shots. You saw Ben at the end, actually, when he's doing his interview.
Jaw.
No, neither one had a broken jaw.
Ben Eubank had something. I don't know. You're right. I jumped the gun there. He went to the hospital. He looked like a broken jaw.
He went to the hospital, but Ben said in the interview, he goes, I heard he has a broken jaw. Eubank has since come back and said there's no broken jaw. He went there because of dehydration. But actually, I could see Ben's jaw, because at the end, if you see a guy, he can't close his mouth when he starts talking, and you start to see those teeth not touching, which happens is you get swelling in the corners of your jaw, usually from uppercuts. When you get hit with uppercuts, bang, what happens is your mandible bangs into your upper skull, and then you get swelling in between, and then your jaw won't close. So when you see a guy who can't really shut his mouth, it's usually because he got hit with uppercuts. Sometimes their jaw is broken. But I think it was just swelling. I've been there before. And you're talking afterwards, and you're just kind of like, you kind of have a fat tongue because you can't close your teeth. And you'll see a guy, he's got a little bit of room when he's talking. And those uppercuts were brutal, and Ben took them. Ben, even when he got hurt, his poker face was great. He didn't show that the shots hurt him. He just stopped throwing punches. You saw him shut down a little bit in terms of punches. And Eubank, being the experienced guy that he is, took advantage of that, took the power off the shots to just start bing, 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 touch, 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 touch. And being a bigger man, granted, he's not a huge puncher, or especially that night or last night, he wasn't that big of a puncher, but he let his hands go. And he got a bigger guy clubbing on your head a lot. Ding, 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 ding. It adds up. And you could see it was adding up. 11 and 12 was Ben dealing with the punches that he absorbed all night long. You saw him wilting in those last two rounds. He couldn't muster up enough. He was getting out pushed by a bigger guy. He was getting out touched by a bigger guy. But he was in there, and he's still throwing hard. Still throwing hard. He throws that right hand with reckless abandon. He doesn't care. You gotta respect him for that.
No, I thought, like I said before, like I thought he earned a lot of respect. I came out of this saying, wow, this kid's tough as hell, because he took a lot of shots. I know Eubank isn't the most powerful guy, but man, he's bigger. He was bigger. Eubank was bigger, and that's why Eubank won that fight. He acted like the bigger man in there, acted like the more experienced guy. But this was
good for Conor. It wasn't just size. He was just he's a better fighter. He was more skilled.
Better fighter. I mean, yeah, he's more skilled. He has more skills more tools in his arsenal. Was bigger, but the rehydration clause was the equalizer in this fight. And
yeah, equalizer, exactly. It came down to skill, because really the weight didn't really matter. I don't think the weight mattered.
No, it was a factor, the rehydration clause in it. But back to Ben, I thought, he took some really big shots. He was in it late in terms of it being competitive and staying in there. But he's a 147 pounder, like he said. Like, I don't fight at this weight. I want to go back down to 147. Like, there is a rematch clause. We'll get to that in just a little bit. But, this guy put up a tough fight. He put up a really tough fight. It just wasn't enough.
He's got 160 pounder balls. I'll say that.
I mean, this both of them fought. You could tell that there was that extra.
The passion, dude. The passion.
Yes. That you can't. Well, that's something we talked about in the Thursday show, is like the there's so many variables in this fight. The thing that you can't measure is the variable of the legacy and what this means and the bragging rights. And that's where it shone. That's where it really shined in this fight, and that's where you kind of threw everything out the window, and like technique kind of went out the window, and it turned into like a barroom brawl, and it just turned into who wanted it more, and that was Eubank. But I mean, Ben standing in there and taking those shots and delivering big shots all fight as a smaller guy was very, very admirable. I think it's going to go a long way. Good first step for him in terms of gaining the respect back from boxing fans. But early on, like in terms of him like moving forward, because you know he's 28 and he's gonna have, he has some runway in his career. It's like I just what I noticed from him is all this wasted movement. You know, he's first two or three rounds, he's just moving like all over the place, not closing the distance, throwing every punch at 100 miles per hour. You know, he's the prototypical hardball pitcher, you know, power pitcher that just throws every 99, 99, 100, 101. Where's the changeup? You know, save some of that for later innings. And I just think he was a little too predictable, Ben, early on. And I think moving forward, he has to fix that if he wants to like hang around and not become just like gimmick fighter.
No, you can't be 100% effort guy at the higher levels. And that's what Ben showed that night. We've said this before on past shows. I think he's regressed. You know, he didn't use his jab. And the second round, he hits Eubank with a jab, hard, stiff, hard jab, and actually bloodied Eubank's nose. And they got completely away from the jab. And then he was just loading up on shots, looking for the home runs, like you said, looking for the 100-mile fastball all night long, ripping hard body shots, but like missing by a mile at times. Because Eubank, once he found his rhythm, he was able to just see those shots coming. Ben is in such fantastic physical condition, his conditioning, so he can throw like that and do like that. Dude, I don't care what weight you're at. If you're at 140, if he goes back down to 147 and he's fighting guys his age, let's go back to the age thing. Fighting guys who are his age, who can match him for youthful exuberance, effort will not be enough. You have to use your skills. If you're going to be a world champion, effort will not be enough. Conor Benn has a lot of physical gifts, a lot of physical talents. He's in great shape, like I said. You can't just sit there and throw fastball after fastball after fastball. Guys at the highest level, guys that are closer to his age, are going to be able to deal with that encounter. Eubank had enough skills. He had enough size. He had enough experience to deal with it. But if he's going to advance in his career, he's got to do more than just fight at 100 mile an hour speed.
Well, he didn't jab enough. I'm looking at the numbers here. Just single digit landed in every round. 8th, 9th, and 10th, he landed a combined 5 jabs, which is not good. Also, abandoned the body. Came on late with the body shots. Where was the body work early on? You have a guy who
He was missing by a mile swinging. If you remember, I remember vividly him swinging shots at the body and missing by a long shot to the head and the body. And, you know, Eubank did a good job. Eubank did a really good job holding ground. He wasn't moving a ton. He was just making him miss by a little bit, just staying long, you know, because he knew his legs weren't there. He had to not move too much because people don't understand moving really, really can sap your gas tank, especially if you're not a mover, especially when you're a bigger guy like Eubank is. But he did a good job of maintaining distance, fighting at range, keeping things in the middle distance. And then when he wanted to, he controlled distance, which is why ultimately he controlled the fight.
Yeah, every once in a while. And when he wanted to, when he got back on his jab, Eubank, he made life a lot easier for him, but it's really hard to do. It's really hard to keep that up for 12 rounds at his age with the rehydration calls and all the factors that went into this. But he showed his class in this fight. You're right, because you have to do a little bit of everything to win a 12-round fight. You gotta move. You got to jab. You got to hit land power shots. You got to have great defense. You got to have IQ. And Eubank just had a little bit more. Like we talked about, he had a little bit more on that big stage. He had been there more times than Ben. He ultimately gets his hand raised, but I mean, Eubank and Ben, you got to figure they're going to run it back, right?
Not necessarily. I've been listening to some interviews. It makes a ton of sense. Ben said in the post-fight interview, "I want my revenge," which means he wants to fight. But listening to a guy immediately after a fight, especially one of that magnitude and the way that it went, especially taking your first loss, I don't know. He's going to go back and sit with his team, talk to his family. If he wants to be a world champion, if he wants to have a shot at being a world champion, I would say don't take the Eubank fight. move back down to 47. Get yourself back down there. Maybe not fight there for right away, because who knows how much weight he actually gained in order to be, you know, 56 and a half, you know, come the weigh-in. He might be difficult to make 47 right away, straight away. So maybe he goes and he fights another fight at 50 in the 50s, and then he works his way down and looks for a title fight with those guys down there, Barrios, Brian Norman. Don't even think about John Ennis. But if he wants to be a world champion, I think getting back down to 47 would be the key, and to do it sooner than later. Or if you want to make some money, because you're going to make a boatload. You take that rematch.
Bro, they already have, according to the promoters, it's already signed, sealed, and delivered, the rematch. September, same location, same clauses. Everything is signed. So I don't understand why.
Does Eubank want it? Because Eubank...
Where's he going? He's not... Canelo. What are his options?
Canelo.
Of course, he'll test the waters, and he'll look...
Canelo.
He will... He's a smart guy. He will let this die down a little bit. Go to a tropical island, sit on the beach with a nice drink, and think about your next move. You deserve it, my friend. And think about your next move. Canelo is kind of under the same umbrella with Riyadh and all that. 168 pounds. Of course, that's the goal. I think it's come for Eubank. It's either Canelo or rematch with Ben. For Ben,
it could be both, because you could do the rematch with Ben in September or in the fall. Because Canelo's locked up, right? He's got Skull, and then in September he's got Crawford.
He's done for the year. In February is the next Canelo date.
So Eubank could fight Ben in the fall, he would be favored once again.
They're going to fight again.
I would love to see what that contract says this time, because Eubank, I don't think, wants to fight at 60 anymore. The fact that he didn't make 60 this time says a lot. But also, rehydration clause. If there's another rehydration clause, if I'm Eubank.
I mean, it has to be in there.
Does it?
I mean, that's the equalizer. As much as I hate the rehydration clause, it's the equalizer in the fight. I mean, it's the reason why.
If I was Team Eubank, we have a rematch clause. If I win, no rehydration.
Much more leverage. You could say, listen, I'll take a little bit less money.
Yeah, I won.
I'm taking the bigger chunk of the pie because I won. But with that rehydration clause, is going out the window.
All right.
But then Ben's side might not go for it, and then Eubank's like, crap, I don't make this amount of money without him. He might not care about the money. But according to everyone, it's September, same stadium, signed, sealed, delivered. Everything is signed off already.
Right, the deal's done. Right, the deal's
everything's signed off. That doesn't mean like you can throw a clause in late or you can take a clause out late.
Eddie was doing interviews, and he was saying he wasn't completely sure about it, because he thinks that Connor has a real shot at being a world champion at 147.
The only shot Ben has at the championship at 147 is Barrios, the one that all of the other fighters at 147 are looking at, licking their chops. Manny Pacquiao at age 45 is looking at coming out of retirement to fight Mario Barrios. The other guys are tied up. Brian Norman is going to fight Jin Sasaki over in Japan. Jerron Ennis is going to have to take on his WBA mandatory. Yeah,
but tied up for how long? Because Ben needs some rest, dude. He took a lot of
Yeah, punches. I mean, those even September, I thought, too, for... September for the rematch, I thought was wishful thinking, but this is the world. We're living in a rematch world. Every big fight in boxing for the remainder of the year, and this year has been rematches and will be rematches. So we've seen this before, where Turkey gets excited, and it's one thing I like about the guy is immediately he's like, "All right, signed, sealed, delivered." It's like a UFC move where they are a well-oiled machine. UFC when it comes to scheduling fights, you'll see a great fight, a controversial one. And they already have they're dangling a date already for the next day. And Turkey did that. He said September, Tottenham Hotspur Arena, we're running this thing back. And as a fan, that gets you excited still. It keeps the momentum going, keeps the conversation going for these two. But for Ben, yeah, it's go down to 147, maybe take an interim fight, maybe at 150, like you said, in terms of like weight wise. But, you know, that's not going to. It's Barrios, because I don't think he's beating Norman, and I don't see him beating Boots. So, like, he has to just look in the mirror and say, like, okay, what am I, really? Do I think I'm a real world-class fighter? Or am I going to go this route and just go another fight with Eubank, line my pockets again? I think there will be a rematch. I think maybe September or fall, even winter, these two will be in the ring again. It did too much business, and it captivated the sports world too much.
I'm not mad about that at all. I thought the fight was very, it was entertaining. Yeah, I didn't think it was an epic all-time classic like everyone's like gushing about. Like I've not
go
seen
on, go off, say go off.
I have not seen a single person be like, I've only seen people being like, oh,
because everyone's afraid
classic.
To say it. Everyone's afraid
it's
to
not,
say it.
It's not, guys. It's not. It's not. It's not. It's not. Neither one of them looked that good. Ben, like I said, was he showed his class. He showed that he was a class below Eubank. Eubank's 35, and he looked 35. He fought like a guy who was dehydrated and is 35 years old. He old manned it. He old manned most of the fight. He figured out ways to move around and make a fight win. You know, in certain areas, like I said, he started the fight drained. He found his rhythm in the middle, and then he ran out of gas and then just fought on the inside and just outworked the smaller guy. And Ben, again, completely abandoned his jab, didn't show any kind of deceptiveness in his offense. It was not a high-level tactical fight in any way, shape, or form. So all these people talk about, oh, this is a classic, instant classic. It's not, guys. Their father's fighting was high-level classic. This is not an epic fight. It was a good fight. It was an entertaining fight. I tip my hat to both men. Both guys dug deep. But let's pump the brakes on saying this is an all-time classic fight of the year fight. It was not. It was not. In terms of
Chris Algieri,
anything.
Get off my lawn. Get off my lawn. Get off my turf backyard.
I'm being the old man now. Good fight, guys. Don't get me wrong. Good fight. But listen, let's pump the brakes on saying this is an all-time instant classic.
Bob Canobio said the same thing. Guy has seen every big fight since 1975. And he calls me up and he's like, what a fight. He's like, fight of the year? I don't know about that. He's like, it was kind of sloppy during that.
He
was like pouring a little bit of cold water on it, but he was like, awesome atmosphere and like everything we just talked about before. But that's going to blind a lot of fans out there. Even like hardcores will point to these Japanese fighters or will point to, you know, any other fight that they can drum up. But the casuals, man, this is like, it's like I texted you before. Every once in a while, we got to appeal to the casuals. It's good for the sport. I think the sport is thriving right now. I think there was a UFC event last night, and it wasn't a big one, but it just looked – I was listening
there
and
was.
Watching it.
There was.
It was like a fight night, and I'm listening to the crowd, and it was like stale. And I'm like, oh, of course it's stale, because I just watched 70,000, one of the most lit crowds you'll ever see for a fight. And it's just – I feel like boxing right now is just blowing away MMA. We're about to – head over to Times Square for one of the most unprecedented events you'll ever see with three of the biggest stars.
That whole weekend. It's not just Times Square. It's
getting
whole
to that,
weekend.
My friend. Naoya Inoue. Sorry,
I'm cutting you off. I'm getting too excited.
Naoya Inoue, Sunday. Canelo Alvarez, Saudi Arabia. Doesn't really get me excited, but it's still Canelo Alvarez. When he steps to that ring, I'm still going to feel feelings. So I think boxing's on an absolute heater right now. And sometimes
so
you
in 8 days,
to-
in 8 days, we're going to have four sick cards.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to figure out the schedule of talking about all these, but you need that casual fight. You need that, like Fury Wilder 3. We were like, ugh, what does this mean? It ended up being one of the best heavyweight fights of the last 20 years. When this fight was announced, I was not excited. This is not catered for me as an American. It's catered for British fans. It's contrived. It almost represented all of the worst aspects of boxing. There was PED usage, weight disparities.
Nepotism.
There was nepotism. There's rehydration clauses. It's all about greedy promoters trying to. It just felt wrong. It was a middleweight versus a welterweight.
Welterweight, yeah.
But it ended up
being good.
To be corny, capturing all of our imaginations. I was sitting on that couch. They had me hooked. I was hooked. I was thoroughly entertained watching that fight. And I think a lot of casual fans, and I think a lot of casual boxing fans, I think a lot of sports fans were left saying, wow, when's the next fight? Are they going to fight again? Oh, what's next week? Times Square. I'll check that out. That you need that in the sport, Chris. You need that casual pull every couple of months or this sport will just disappear.
No question. It was good for the sport. It was a fun night. I'm not knocking the event. I'm not going to any of that. It was a good fight. It was entertaining, like you said. I enjoyed the fight. I was looking forward to the fight. We were talking about it last week. We're like you said, when this thing was announced, it was like, middleweight versus a welterweight. They're fighting because of their dads.
Right.
But then the buildup was really good. And then as it got closer, just like the first time, when they were supposed to fight the first time, we were excited about it the first time 3 years ago. And we're talking about it. And I actually picked Ben to win then. You know, obviously everything, the whole fallout from that whole debacle. And then this fight comes around. And as it got closer, there was a lot of attention coming to the fight. We were talking about the fight quite a bit. I was excited for the fight. I was excited yesterday afternoon getting ready for the fight. Although the undercard, which we're going to get into, really almost put me to sleep.
I did take a nap during one of the fights.
Yeah, I actually tuned in late, whatever. Anyway, but that's regardless. But it was a entertaining afternoon, late afternoon of fights.
You know what's interesting as well is like YouTube boxing has kind of, you know, it took off because boxing was going dormant for a while. 2021, we weren't getting the biggest fights. 2022, not so much either. That was began the rise of YouTube boxing and influencer boxing, and that has kind of went down a little bit. The interest in YouTuber boxing has gone down while boxing has risen up. But the one thing I loved about YouTuber boxing, not much, but was the buildups. Like, they knew how to sell a fight. You knew how to get, like, Jake Paul, what his fights, he understands the marketing. He understands promotion. A lot of these other YouTubers understand it, too. But the minute the fight starts, it's trash. Those fights are horrible. And even the casual, even the influencer boxing fans are like, oh, this Logan Paul Dylan Danis, for instance, had an unbelievable promotion because Danis was going crazy, you know, posting the pictures of Logan Paul's girl and doing all that stuff, and it captivated a lot of sportsmen.
He can build a fight. Yeah, he can't fight.
Your guy's a piece of shit. But I was invested. I was.
Jeez, Dan, tell us how you really feel.
That guy's not good. Not a good guy. I think we know that. But he's a bad dude. But I was into it, and everyone was into it because it was everywhere, and they were promoting the hell out of that fight. And then they step in the ring, and I believe it was one of the worst fights I've ever seen in my life.
Ever.
Okay, but point being, this one had everything. It's very rare where you have the full promotion, the full throttle, everyone involved, and then they step into the ring, and then they're slugging it out, showing some technique early, slugging it out late. Everyone goes home happy. It was a perfect storm.
Yes, it was. And listen, this is something I've been thinking about a lot. The fact that we have two fathers who fought each other at the highest level, right? World champions, unification situations where they fight each other. They fought each other twice, and they captured the heart of their nation. They're both British legends because of those fights with each other. And then they have sons who are around the same age enough that they could actually fight one day. And then they fucking do. Like at a good level. This isn't like Leila Ali and Jackie Fraser lied. Like, this is like a legit level, sub championship level. Neither one have been champions, but like high level. But also, you can get, listen, Ali and Fraser lied, did not get 67,000 people into an arena.
Nah, man.
The fact that you could have two epic fighters who had fought each other and then their sons 35 years later step into the ring and fight at a high level is out of control. It's mind-blowing to even think that that's a real thing. So now, looking back, you think about, like you said about earlier, it's like, when's Eddie going to recoup all this money he's put into Conor? This was it.
Yeah.
This was what the whole, his whole career, from a promoter standpoint, was for this night. And it happened. And they did it.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I can't even like put into words what I was watching. It's like, that's why I don't think it will ever happen again. It's easy to say, oh, we need this to happen all the time. I put out a little video when I was walking the streets. I was so excited. I had to go outside and walk around to cool off, to cool down after that fight. And I was like, man, like, I wish all fights were like this. If we could just promote better, but you can't. This was a once in a lifetime thing. Like, we're never going to see something like this. We're never going to see something like this again. And you're right. If it was, you know, say like Eubank just took over late and, you know, jabbed his way to a decision, we would have left with a little sour taste. Would have been like, you know, it was cool. They brawled it out last three rounds.
You know what I was thinking? I was like, what if Eubank stopped him in the ninth, just like his father had stopped
Nigel
in the ninth? That would have been too much. That would have been like, all right, guys, who's writing the script?
I liked how
the NFL is scripted. Yeah. That would have been like, all right, guys, it's too much.
I like how they acknowledged the dads. I thought the ring walks were awesome, getting the dads involved. In the ring, they announced both fathers. It seems like the dads have buried the hatchet. And you see Eubank Sr. try to hug Ben before the fight?
Before the fight. And he was like, nah.
Dude, I was like, what are you doing, bro? Get out of there. Don't do that. That's too much. Do that after. Eubank, the kids did not. No hugs afterwards, bro.
No. So if kind of happy they didn't. If there was ever a question if the beef was real, it was settled that night. Even Ben afterwards in the press conference, because Eubank went to the hospital. He did not do the post-fight press conference. Ben did. He held court and he talked for a very long time. But he said, like, you could tell in the things that he was saying, he still doesn't like Chris Eubank. Like,
that's what I mean. No, no hugs, no embrace.
Nope. Like, no, the beef is real.
I do like when you guys embrace after. I get it. I like the buildup sometimes is never really like it's half like truths and stuff, and it's promotion. Guys will say, I want to kill your parents, and then they go in there fight, and then the next thing they're hugging. I'm like, something about that's just wrong. These two don't like each other. They really don't. And then you could sell this rematch, and yeah, but it had everything. It had everything, and I think we're still in that afterglow of it, and a lot of people are excited about what they just watched, and you know, give it a week or two, 3 weeks, a month, a better fight comes along, and then it's just recency bias, and then we'll look back and say that was a really cool event, but I don't know if exactly if it was fight of the year, but I would not be shocked if it wins fight of the year, unless something blows it out of the water. I hope so, because that means a great year for boxing.
We got a lot of year left.
It's only April. It's almost May. Yeah, we've got a lot of time. All right, moving on to the undercard. I guess Aaron McKenna. McKenna was the star of this undercard.
Yeah, Aaron McKenna's a bad boy. We talked about him on our last show, and we said that we both picked him to win. I think I was a little more adamant about it than you were, but the kid's good. I've heard very good things about him. But then what he did that night against Liam Smith, and Liam Smith is a very, very solid guy, dominated. I mean, I think even on the official scorecards, I think Beefy won one or two rounds because it certainly looked like that. The kid was in total control, super smooth, switching sides, seamless in the way he's able to mix his offense and his defense, long, lean, punches hard. Beefy Smith showed a great chin, took a lot of damage, goes down in the 12th round from a body shot. The kid didn't forget the body either. Very, very impressed with Aaron McKenna. I think that was a great showcase performance for him against a really, really tough world-class guy. I think the potential for Aaron McKenna moving forward is very, very high.
He looked great. I mean, great. Right before the fight, I put a little bit of money down on Smith stoppage because it was like plus.
Bad idea.
I did not think.
No, it wasn't a bad. It wasn't a bad.
He was like plus 450. So like crazy.
They knew what McKenna was.
Right, but in just terms of Liam Smith, who has so much experience versus an unproven guy, McKenna, if he could somehow catch him late, I don't know. I just thought $25 on a plus 450. The mistake I made was tweeting it out, and then a bunch of people were dunking on me. Like this guy never. One guy was like, "This guy never wins, Dan," but I'll still listen to his podcast. That was funny. But then when I won, I did pick Eubank decision. And that was plus 290, and we did win there. So, yeah, but more importantly, McKenna established himself. And this was a huge card, and people were walking away from that undercard, which was not the best undercard, saying this guy's legit. You know, he was a really good prospect. We saw him on a bunch of Golden Boy cards over the years. He's young. I think he will grow into middleweight. He's like 154. Liam Smith looks like he should, in the words of Nassim Hamed, he should finish. He should just... You know, he had a great career, man. You had an awesome career. You fought freaking Canelo Alvarez. You fought big stadium fights. But he looked...
He stopped Eubank. Like, that's a big feather in the cap.
He just looked old. And Aaron McKenna looked phenomenal. I mean, he was throwing everything and landing everything. Just fought like a guy really, really with a lot of poise. And I came away super impressed with McKenna. You are as well. Awesome. Yeah. Can't wait to see him next. That was the exclamation point of the undercard. Anthony Yard versus Lyndon Arthur. I don't know why they fought for a third time. It was crazy because the senior came out of that SUV and the crowd was at a fever pitch. And then I'm like, oh, shit, we got 12 rounds of Anthony Yard and Lyndon Arthur. I'm going to fall asleep on the couch. I did.
Incredibly forgettable.
Say about this fight.
Incredibly forgettable fight. And I actually really like Anthony Yard. Lyndon Arthur is a master of slowing fights down. He just brings everything to a screeching halt. He's good. Don't get me wrong. But yeah, really, really poor fight. I was hoping that I was hoping Anthony Yard would win that fight because, again, I think he's way more exciting. And I could see him fighting those other guys. I know he won the fight. I was hoping he won the fight. But it was a close fight. Lyndon Arthur was able to slow the pace really well, and you saw why Anthony Yard doesn't win the big fights. he doesn't have that elite level ability to really control the pace of a fight. He's just very powerful. He's explosive, which makes him fun if you want to trade with him. But if you don't, you got to be a little more deceptive. And we didn't see that from Anthony Yard. But Anthony Yard gets a win. He moves on. Hopefully he gets in with some of the other guys, because I do think he's a very fun fighter. Him and Callum Smith. I wouldn't mind seeing that.
Yeah.
Callum can crack and he'll make it a fight. And Anthony Yard can you know, obviously he can punch and he's got some looping shots. I mean,
there are some names at 175. I think Smith and Benavidez should fight each other. But Yard is sticking around. He's hanging around in that picture. He's got a name. He looked good.
He's like just outside those top guys, just outside.
Mm-hmm.
Like you gotta fight him to stay within the circle of trust.
CBS Chris Billiam Smith beat Glanton. Glanton in the fight week said, "I'm gonna leave you with brain damage," which wow. Not a big fan of that statement. But they fought it out. CBS showed a little more polish. I was shocked. Not shocked. I was surprised because I thought that he took such a beating in that Zerto fight. I thought Glanton was just going to out-athleticism him. Is that a word?
Yes. Made it up.
Out-athleticism him. And he did not, Glanton. He did not do that. He did not. CBS did. You can't say, "I'm going to leave you with brain damage." And then, well, I'm glad CBS didn't leave with brain damage. But that's tough talk. But Billiam Smith, that's a big win for him. Mentally, everything. Because I kind of wrote him off. After that Zerto loss, he got beat pretty bad in that Zerto fight.
Well, like you said, a big win, especially the way that he did it. He made adjustments from that Zerto fight where, yes, he took a lot of damage in that fight, but he was actually very much in that fight early on. He just got outworked by Zerto, who outworks everyone. But he took a tremendous amount of damage to the head and to the body. Made an adjustment in this fight because Glanton's a guy, he can hurt you. He can give you brain damage. He'll sit, if you stand in front of him and trade with him, he can fuck you up. So the fact that Chris Billiam Smith was actually make an adjustment and fought a much smarter, more tactical fight, it shows you why he's world-class, because he really is. He's very, very good. So he's another player now at cruiserweight once again, even though he's already lost to Zerto, but he's right there. And then, you know, Glanton's Glanton. I don't think it changes what Glanton is. Like, he's still... He's like that sub-championship level guy who's always durable, always tough, and he's going to push you. He might looks knock off part. One of these guys one time, so he definitely looks the part. Comes in great shape. He's getting a nice little run over there, you know, fighting on the other side of the world. Hopefully making some good paydays. But Glanton's a hard guy not to like. You know, I could go without the saying giving guys brain damage, but whatever. The guy can fight, and he's tough. But Chris Billiam Smith, I held him highly. I did prior to the Zerto fight, and I held him highly afterwards. I thought he boxed well. But the fact that he made an adjustment, was able to fight the way that he did in this fight and get the win, you know, the guy's still alive.
Yeah. I thought it was really nice. I thought it was a nice win for him. Moving on to Vidal Riley, who is like an influencer / real fighter. I thought he had a nice performance over Chev Clark. You know, Vidal Riley was like being mentioned for like Jake Paul a couple of years back, but I think he's kind of graduated from that, and he looked pretty good opening up this card in that one.
I missed that one. That's all on you, buddy. I missed that one.
It was very nothing early. Nothing to write home about. I mean, 12 noon started here in New York. I had really nothing going on yesterday. I actually popped it on at 12. I wasn't watching, like, you know, studying every round, scoring it. I had it on in the background, but I remember hearing Vidal Riley's name and my buddy Wade Plem, who is, you know, big on the influencer scene, had told me about him a few years back. And I don't think he's Jake Paul level. I think, I don't know with that one. I mean, going back to cruiserweight and Zerto and all this, Jake Paul is fighting Chavez Jr. and Zerto is fighting Dorticos on the co-main event, and there are some rumblings out there that, you know, they're kind of like dangling a lot of things for Jake Paul and cruiserweights. If Jake Paul wants to get a legitimate title shot, and if it could come against Zerto at cruiserweight.
Wow. Yeah,
not confirmed. That's not a confirmation, but they just look at the tea leaves. Sometimes they give
say,
you the
I'm
tea leaves.
I'm going to say that right now. That's not happening.
I mean, it could.
No. Why would he? He's not taking that fight. Zerto would destroy him. Like,
it wouldn't. I don't see that.
Getting a win over Chavez Jr., whom I call, so I called Chavez Jr.'s fight when he lost to
Silva,
Anderson Silva in Mexico, and it was an abysmal performance. And that was in 2019, I think, maybe
2021.
I was 21. Okay, it was after the pandemic. That's right. So 2021, when things were getting back into normal, 2021, it was an abysmal performance, and then Jake Paul beats Anderson Silva at Anderson Silva's boxing prime. Who needs this fight? What are we doing? You're chasing names at this point. How does that prepare you to fight for a legitimate world title? No, but my point is, like, what would give him the idea that, like, oh, I just beat this guy, I can get in there with this guy? No,
they are
goddamn
what they do. I mean, Jake Paul MVP they're setting stuff up here, giving him options. And if they, here's the option.
I'm telling you, he's not going to take that option.
I know. Yeah, we'll see. It's definitely going to be an option. If Zerto beats Dordicos, Jake Paul beats Anderson Silva. Beats Chavez Jr. It's going to be looked at, and the WBA will sanction that for a title. You'll get it. He'll be in the top. They'll put Jake Paul into the top 15. Zerto will be allowed to have a voluntary title defense, and that will be next. In terms of Jake Paul versus Chavez, I have no problem with that fight. If you take away Jake Paul's influencer status, his celebrity status, this is a guy with 11 fights taking on a guy with 60 fights. And now if you add in the variables here, is if you add in who Chavez is, a guy that's never taken his career serious, had so much potential and squandered so many opportunities and just doesn't train and all that. But 60 fights is 60 fights, Chris. You tell me this all the time. 60 fights, that's a lot of fights.
Yeah, but I've seen Chavez Jr. firsthand. I've seen him quit over and over. He quit Danny Jacobs. He actually had a good first round, and then he gets his nose broken. Comes back to the corner, tells his corner, goes, "Meh, my nose." And they looked at him like, "So, what does that mean? It's a boxing match." And he just completely flat out, "I'm done." The guy, once you learn how to quit, you're a quitter. I don't care what you've done in the past. This is, I don't know.
I think he has a chance. I think Chavez has a chance to redeem himself. It's up to him. I don't know what he is thinking in his head. Does he even think he's redeemable? Is he given up on that long ago? I don't know. I have to sit and talk to the guy and understand where he's at mentally. But all the things you just said, quitting in that Chavez fight, you know, those videos of him training in his underwear in the living room when Freddie Roach was his trainer, hard to forget. Absolutely.
He lost to Anderson Silva.
Losing to Anderson Silva. Another hard thing to forget. He can erase all of that. If he takes this fight serious, we're looking at a guy with muscle memory as of a fighter. 60 fights, 60 training camps. Some of them are in the living room. Okay. He's 60 fights, man. Versus
What weight is this fight at?
Cruiserweight.
199.
Jake is the favorite for sure, but come on, man.
He was world champion at 160, dude. 160, he was world champion.
Yeah, but he's big,
and that was 13 years ago.
I know, but 13. I mean, he's big now. I mean, he was always a big guy at 168.
Big. What? Big belly. What are we talking about?
Big guy, big frame. You talk about it all the time. He walks.
Jake Paul's huge.
I know Jake Paul's huge.
Jake Paul's 220 with abs.
I'm not saying that Chavez is going to win. I just say this is the if. You put a big if. If Chavez
This is going to be a really good marketing plan to reinvent.
The Mexicans.
To make people think the Mexicans don't really like Chavez Jr. either, though. They don't like quitters, man. Like, he's not his father. His father is an all time legend.
That's what they need. They need talk about dads, right? We started the show off talking about dads.
Yeah.
We need Chavez Sr. to get behind his son. Say, listen, I know my son's a village idiot. Let's all rally behind him. I know I've kind of made Canelo my son. That's, you know, that hurts. We got to rally behind our guy and stop Jake Paul. Stop this dead in his tracks.
I would not be surprised if that is the narrative.
I know Chavez Sr. is he costs a pretty penny.
He will go to bat for his son.
He's not cheap. No. I know we're trying to get a hold of him. I think PPV was trying to get a hold of him, and he's not cheap. But I just think there's a storyline here of if Chavez can right a lot of wrongs, just giving him a tough fight, like, I think would be interesting.
He actually might. Like you said,
why wouldn't he? 60 fights, and if what, why, it's 50-60% of him.
Why wouldn't he? What do you mean, why wouldn't he? He's quit. He's a quit. Like, if he shows
I think
up,
Chavez just, at this
if he
point,
shows up for a payday, if he shows up for a payday and goes out there and goes ding ding ding, oh my nose hurt, and quits, he can do that. If he actually fights, if he comes in decent shape and actually fights and makes it a fight, yes, I can see where you're going.
That's what I'm looking for.
That would be surprising to me. That would be surprising to me.
10 rounds, him put up a fight and give Jake Paul one of the tougher fights is what I'm expecting, because this is a quote unquote real boxer. I know he's 39. And he hasn't been super competitive in a while, but
hasn't been super competitive. You're being really nice, dude. Hasn't been super competitive
against,
in a long, long time.
I watched him against Uriah Hall, and Uriah Hall actually threw more punches than Chavez, which I found to be insane.
Crazy.
Because I mean, Chavez was the pressure fighter in his when he was closer.
He was
to
coming
his
up, dude. I actually liked watching him fight. He was entertaining. He was ripping through guys. Early on, and actually like up until the title, and even his fight with Sergio Martinez, that was
12th round stuff of legends.
I mean, he got tuned up all night, but Sergio Martinez is a really difficult nut to crack, and then he came back in that 12th round, and we all looked at
that
like,
was
why didn't he do
most
this earlier?
12th rounds ever.
His best win by far was the Andy Lee. He stopped Andy Lee, which is super impressive because that was a really hard thing to do. Just ran him over. But yeah, after the Sergio Martinez fight, he was kind of exposed. Fonfara beat the hell out of him. He really wasn't ever really good.
He stopped
over
trying, bro. He stopped training. Yeah. Started getting drugs. I mean, the guy was big time drug user, drinking, all that stuff. We'll see. I think he's going to give Jake a tough fight. I think Jake will win. Give him a tough fight. But then that's when we started this conversation with the cruiserweights. They're giving him options. After this fight's over, Jake can say, I can either stick with the YouTuber influencer type fights, KSI, Tommy Fury 2. Or there is now a path for me to try to get a title shot against Zerto.
It's a big jump. Really big
huge
jump.
Huge jump.
I don't see it.
Huge jump.
I think he needs to beat, and I'm not saying this like to be fair, because fairness is obviously out the window. But in terms of his own psyche, to be able to feel like I want to step in a ring with a guy like Zerto, I need to beat someone in the top 15, top 10, to even think I belong there personally. I'm talking about as a fighter. Because I consider Jake Paul a fighter at this point. He's not a YouTuber. He's a boxer. He's coming out there. He's doing what he's supposed to do in terms of training, whatever. He's fought a couple of real guys, not many. And he's fought a lot of guys that were no-hopers. But in order for himself to feel like he belongs there and not feel like imposter syndrome, he's got to fight somebody who can actually fight, who is relevant. If he can feel like he can fight for a world title. Zerto is a dangerous guy. He will beat you up. He beat up Chris Billiam Smith. We just talked about Chris Billiam Smith. He beat the hell out of Chris Billiam Smith.
Yeah,
he's a very, very good fighter.
He's not like a paper champ. He's not like the weakest
Zerto
link.
Zerto will
of a,
hurt you, dude.
He's not the weakest you. Link of a weight class. He's legit. Well, that's just the narrative out there. That's just some theories being floated around. That's the end of the program. We are gearing up for a crazy fight week over in New York City. I'll have a lot of coverage this week. Did get credentialed for fight week. I'm still waiting to hear back for fight night. They have not given out fight night passes for Times Square yet. They said they're still mulling it over. I hope I'm selected. I hope I'm part of the process. I will be there all week. Ryan Garcia, Rolly Romero, Teofimo Barboza, Haney. Haney Barboza. Haney Ramirez.
Yes.
Barboza.
Haney Ramirez,
fighting.
Teofimo Barboza, Haney. And then Ryan and Rolly.
He's fighting. Yes. And then Canelo. And then Inoue.
There's a lot coming down the pipeline.
We're going to do a bunch of shows this week, buddy.
Just going to try to figure that out. About the game plan.
We're going to have to do like a show every day.
We'll have to figure it out. So stay tuned, everybody. I hope you enjoyed the show. Hope you enjoyed Eubank Ben. That was awesome. Let's end the show with how we always end it. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs. Good night.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it three times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.